And welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today I have two guests, not one, just two. I have a writer, director, whose names I probably will get wrong, but we're going to try anyway. Elle Riggs, that one I can get right. Sasha Iskra.
You got that right.
Woohoo, two for two. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Simon. And funny enough, mine is actually Elle Rigg, no S.
I wrote it with an S. Oh, crap.
You know what? It happens to everyone. Don't worry about it.
Close. One out of two. That's better than usual. So
that's right.
Let's start at the beginning. I mean, this is a pretty heavy topic, and I wanted to discuss, why did you want to do this topic? It's short. I mean, it's not exactly enjoyable to watch. In Your Time's the film. Forgot to mention it.
Sasha, you want to kick us off, or you want me to go?
I can speak from my point of view as a director for In Your Own Time. The thing is, these are the kinds of conversations that are difficult to have in life. These are the kinds of things that are difficult to face down in life. And so something that I think makes art extremely important, extremely unique in that way, is the things that we have trouble saying we can express in a moving image, in a way that we may never, ever have the courage to do in front of the people we need to face or the people we have to have that conversation. And then by that way, we're able to do it. Maybe it leads to being able to face it in person, or maybe it doesn't. But I think that that's why art is so important, is because sometimes when you can't find the words, this is what you use. And there have been many times in my life where I had a story or I had to tell something that's happened to me, and it was just kind of breaking my bones, that's caging my heart. And it's just, I don't have the power or the courage to speak about it, but I'll write about it, but I'll shoot a film about it. And I think that that's why we made this film. This is one of those topics where it's going to forever be so challenging to be able to speak aloud about it. But we get to try and translate that in art. And sometimes it's even more intense when you do it that way. Sometimes it's even more articulate than if you tried to say it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm happy to jump off of that, Sasha. Thanks for saying that. Elle here, the writer of In Your Own Time. And Simon, the reason that I wrote this, in full transparency, is I had an experience standing up to my abuser 2 years ago. Someone who's been in my life my whole life. And, I witnessed this abusive relationship, as a third party sort of, but also, you know, it was in my home and in my atmosphere. And so, while of course the subject matter is about physical violence against women, it's also a bit of a peek into therapy and how these cycles of abuse are not being dealt with in a really productive way. I mean, even I went into therapy after having this experience, and I found myself just sort of reliving the experience and trying to break these cycles. And how do you get away from this abuser and the manipulation and et cetera? Because it's not just the physical violence, it's everything that comes along with that. And I think that as a society right now, we haven't cracked that, right? Therapy realistically isn't an exact science, and we don't know. It stands to reason that the things that help us can also harm us in this way. And that's what I wanted to write into this film, and sort of the nature of these cycles of abuse that are happening and what that could look like in the future with the aid of technology, and also putting a positive spin on future technology and how it pertains to the metaverse. And so that is sort of where the impetus came from with this film. And as you said, like it can be a difficult watch, but it's a difficult watch for everyone who experiences that, which is a significant amount of women experience violence by an intimate partner. And so being able to see your experience through art can often be healing and remind you that there is a community in this world that has similar experience to you and can feel seen.
So I just want to back up a bit. You wrote the project first. Sasha, then you came onto the project, or were you always attached?
I was attached as a producer early on, and Elle I'm going to let her speak to that. But I was attached initially as a producer, and then the script evolved and became extremely specific to the story of the protagonist in Your Own Time Now. And after a lot of talking and a lot of coffee and tea dates, she asked me to direct, and I said, please let me pitch you properly, because by then we had become friends.
Yeah.
And the last thing I wanted was for her to give me this project, which I desperately wanted, but I just kind of dug a little deep in myself, and I'm like, the last thing you want is for her to regret. Maybe she should have picked somebody else. So I actually was like, let me pitch myself and look at these other directors. And if you still want me, then I know that I got this story fair and square, and I will direct the hell out of it.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Before you answer, Al, I do have a question for you. I want to go through with that. So we have Sasha Attach. You've written your life story somewhat. How is getting into that? Now you're friends with your director. You're ready to go, and you're reliving experiences. How is that, like, putting that on screen? Would you want to relive this? I would say no.
Oh, man. I mean, you know, in full transparency, it has been pretty healing, to be honest. And it's a little bit meta, right? Because I'm talking about therapy in the film while also having a therapeutic experience writing about this thing. And yes, you're right. There were some dark moments while I was writing this, but it was on the heels of this experience. And I knew, I think art, some of the best art comes from a deeply personal space. People who have experienced things and are able to share those things with the world. So yeah, there were, of course, moments that were painful, but having this community, having Sasha, like she said, she came onto the film, earlier on in early iterations when it was more of just a world build, you know, this idea of separating one's consciousness. I think the idea of the therapy aspect had been built out prior. And like I said, that splitting of the conscious mind versus the body and what that looks like, because I think we're not, too far off from that. We sort of already live in the metaverse when we're on our phones and on Instagram and all of these things. You know, it is our conscious mind there. So the early iterations and conversations that we were having were, okay, what does that look like when the body stays in the real world and the mind goes in the metaverse? And then I had this experience where I was like, gosh, like, what would that look like in a therapy perspective when you're able to heal physically out of the wounds that your body is holding and able to constructively go through that therapy pattern in your consciousness. So, yes, of course there were dark times in the writing experience and the conversation, but, I think anyone who's spent even 5 minutes with Sasha knows that she just has so much space and so much capacity to offer positivity, love, and light, and how to be very nourishing in the writing process, in the friendship process of developing very sensitive topics. And so it was equal parts painful and also incredibly just therapeutic to say this is my story. And I think a lot of other women, we've already received so much response of women and organizations who have been like, yes, this is true.
Sasha, do you think she would have given the same performance without you being friends? Like if you just were a director for hire?
Yes. Because that's what actors do. Really great actors, really strong actors who are willing to be vulnerable inside of an imaginary space, inside of a script, in front of the camera, on stage. Something that I will absolutely refuse to take credit for is that performance, because that's what actors do. And that's why I love actors so much, is because they're going to use themselves as an instrument. They're not a cellist. They're not a pianist. There isn't a third thing. It's just your body. This is it. And so, I will say that while I would have been wildly jealous, I know that Elle would have gotten this performance. I know that Johnny, who plays her husband, would have gotten this performance. That said, the thing that I feel like was important for me in doing this is my relationship to the topic. And that's something that I was really, really honest with Elle about. I said, look, I may be compromised or I may not be, but something that I will say is that I have a perspective here. And if these are perspectives that can shake hands together, then I think that we can make a really incredible story out of this. And I was fortunate enough to be, to get to be part of the development process when she and her co-writer were working on this. It's just something that, you know, I don't, I'm not going to toot my own horn because I respect acting and the craft of acting so much. It is amazing to me when an actor will take a script and be, they'll take their entire life experiences and the research they do and put it there for you. And then you get to go to work and mold that performance into the script, that you, into the story, into what you're looking for. It's just, the flexibility was incredible.
Thanks.
Okay. I'm going into the film now. So anybody listening, I apologize. Those were a couple of questions I want to get clear, but let's go into the film. The part I enjoy the most.
Start here. The hands are doing this.
Exactly. So let's go into it. Music. I think your music sets the tone for this whole film. And I find you, I don't know how to, you play with me. Until I knew what the film was about, I did not know where it was going. I will be very honest.
I think the music
definitely puts me in a false sense of security, even as a man. I want to say that. You have me like sitting as a little baby, just sitting there going, this is nice. But where is this going? So was that the plan the whole time, to convince me you're taking me on a journey that sort of goes really dark by the end?
Yeah, I was cold. That was a cold move, I got to admit.
I will give you credit. It was cold to be watching it. As a man, I'm like, this is not okay.
Yes and no, but mostly yes. Because this is something I'll credit our DP, Andrew Trost, for, is the rise and fall in the story with the images and the progression of it, and then the sound mix that our editor, Spencer Morin, did. We will never be able to take full credit, because that was really incredible and expressed what we were hoping for, because you never want to have that apex of the story to be wasted. You want that progression to be exactly what you'd hope. And honestly, like, I wanted people to be on the edge of their seat and freaking out a little bit in a way that, you know, the creeping under your skin part is not a slasher horror at all. It's not, it's just a, like this growing dread feeling. But I felt like we couldn't get that if we went right there for it. I felt like it should grow, and you should make it safe. And in all honesty, she is safe in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That is a safe space. It starts out where she's very safe, and then it evolves from there. So, but yeah.
Do you find you achieve that through the white backdrops? Maybe it's a green screen. I was trying to figure it out, because you definitely cheat numerous times to set up mood.
That was such, I'll credit Anthony Nicolau, our producer, for this, because we were asking for a whole lot. That it was a white, that was a, not a volume. It was we're in a cyclorama. And as you know, Simon, budgets for short films are just
very I know.
Small. And like, you just, I remember Anthony looking at sheets, his spreadsheets and our schedule, and was just like, well, we're going to need a miracle. And he found a miracle. He found a space where we were able to do all of it in one space, because we had so many options. And yeah, the white space, absolutely. That's what we wanted to communicate, because it's extremely neutral. It's as if like you are coming to a drawing board and you're putting yourself and you're putting your home. And now you're putting, do I explore this memory or don't I? Let me wait. Let me see. Oh, well, somebody's inserting the memory anyway. I have to deal with it now, no matter what. The white space was so that we could give you that impression as a viewer, so that you can have the feeling of, what if it was me? And I had to start at baseline. And I am specifically in this room to deal with something that has been haunting me. So yes, that white space, like, that was a miracle. I'm in awe of our producer.
So Al, was this your creation? Did you write in your notes white space, or you just sort of wrote sitting on a couch?
No, I had a pretty specific image of this, and I think that the haunting aspect of it throughout the film, as you were talking about with the sound and the scoring and everything, it was a very specific image, and I think I sort of had this underlying, like, we really have to do this justice because it's science fiction, and it's a genre that isn't as made up with women yet. And so really navigating this in a way that was really strong and having a very clear sense of purpose while also keeping that haunting aspect and the story structure and really moving it through in those ways was incredibly important, that we use the budget properly and have these stunning images like Sasha said from our incredible team who pulled all of this together. So yes, it was written in with the intentionality of, if we're going to write a science fiction, it's got to be right.
Okay, let's just go over the budget very quickly. I just want to go over the location budget really more than anything else. You have a house and a doctor's office. Those are only really two main things, I think. I think they're two separate places.
And then the cyclorama.
Cyclorama?
Yeah, the white psych.
The white, yeah.
Oh, I thought that was the apartment.
No, okay.
Break those down for me then.
The doctor's office and where the patient was sleeping is one place. The couple's apartment and the cyclorama is one place. We had two physical locations, and we turned it into five. So
good work.
Yeah.
So hang on, I'm not letting you off the hook that easily. How'd you get the locations is what I want to know.
So we're like, our director of photography was really honest about what this needed visually. Elle was really honest about wanting to, like there were some non-negotiables of, like, if it's going to be expressed in the, it really does need to be this. And then Anthony and I had a talk, and Anthony, basically our producer, worked a miracle, and a company called Chemistry Creative in Brooklyn said, yes, absolutely, come over, check out this space. And they have an editing bay / guest reception area that was beautifully furnished. And Anthony took a look around, and he asked Chemistry Creative, like, can we also film here? And they said, well, sure, this would be your space for the day. And we went from needing 4 days of shooting to squeezing all of that in two, which was very, very spicy, Simon. It was spicy for everybody. I gotta say, I will never not be impressed by DP and his team, G&E and their team, and the producer. They made magic out of a budget that I thought was really substantial for a short film, but you know, when you make stories like these, you still got to be extremely creative and figure out what you can do. And that's something our DP always puts to us, is asking the question of let's prove what we can do on this budget. So between our DP and our producer, they enabled us to be able to get those images. But yeah, that's 2 days of shooting, two locations. Wow.
Yeah,
I'm just going to stay with you for a bit, Sasha. Sorry, I will get back to you, I promise. You have a shot of eyeglasses, and there's a digital effect right on that eyeglass, which is very minor, and if you're not paying attention, you'll miss it. Now, I don't know if it's needed. I like the way it's used. I understand why you used it, but was that always in the plan? Because I can't see that being a writing note. I think that's more of you deciding to add that.
So I appreciate that so much because Elle, Anthony, and I absolutely had long talks about what would this look like? What would we use? What is the device? Is it on his eyeball? Can we do it on his eyeball? Is there going to be a HUD like in Minority Report, which was a movie we love and I was personally inspired by? Man, that movie lives rent-free in my head when I think about the kind of sci-fi that I will be making in my career. And something that I and Elle and I people talked about is like, well, this is near future, and we're already seeing the kind of technology that is being created. And it's been a lot more subtle than we thought it was going to be. It's probably going to be, you know, Simon, yours and my glasses. Like, they're going to retrofit it, and then we can put it, and we'll be able to see what we're working on. And honestly, like, that's what we embraced is, I think it's going to be a pair of glasses. I think that they're going to figure out, especially for us nearsighted folks, there's going to be plenty of real estate in there for you to just put it in there. So as I'm working and taking notes, I'm watching the therapy happen. And that's what, and that's the conceit that Elle, when she was writing this, is the therapist is watching the metaverse, his patient, work through this memory and starting to go through some consternation that she's fighting back or changing the memory so it's easier to handle. Or, you know, I mean, that's what we were playing with. But yeah, I remembered thinking, like, wouldn't it just be glasses? We had a headset. We had so many prototypes that we got from a really good friend of ours, Guillaume, who is like he's production designer, amateur production designer who wants to go further with it. And he's French, so he was really hard on us. And he said, look, I don't know, but it's not going to be like that. It's going to be simple. And I think he was right. I think he was really right about that.
Yeah. Okay. Al, were you paired for all the close-ups? Long shot, close-up, long shot. Like, that's when I started getting confused. I will say, I think that was the plan to confuse me at that point. And it definitely works because, again, I didn't know what the film was about when I first watched it. Cool. I'm waiting for somebody to get sliced. I really was. I'll be honest. I was waiting for somebody, you especially, to take him out. And I really thought that's what this was about at the beginning. Obviously, later on, I don't. But with the close-ups of that, I was waiting. So was that in your writing process to get me confused at that point? Or should I be confused?
No, it certainly wasn't in the writing process, I wouldn't say. I mean, again, everything was to sort of give this haunting image, which everyone on our team was very clear about what that would look like. And Andrew Trost just absolutely knocking it out of the ballpark. Coming in and saying, okay, this is a shot list. This is what I'm looking to achieve with this and what I think speaks to the story. And adding that level of confusion and sort of dissonance within the film where you don't really know where it's going. And in a lot of ways, I almost prefer that. If I'm going to a movie theater and I'm seeing a film, I don't want to be spoon-fed. I want to be asking the questions along the way, because then once the questions get answered, it's so much more satisfying. You know, we went into this saying, how do we make it that the audience is asking questions? And once more, ultimately, after the film is over, I mean, we're an 11-minute film maximum. So, you know, how do we get that response that's like, ooh, we really want to know what happens after this or what happened before this?
Yeah, I think that that's the key here. It's the short film. It's just like, man, where we were itching to tell so much of this story, and we had to get really... We had to get really economical about it. And I can't keep giving our team kudos enough, Andrew Trost and Anthony and Spencer, who cut this film and ratcheted up the tension with the shots that we, you know, that Andrew got on set. You're right, Simon. I really, like, if we had the budget for blood work, I would have absolutely been pitching that she fights back. Absolutely. Because to come back to what this film is truly about, that moment when she decides to leave, that moment when he decides to leave, or they decide to leave, that's the most dangerous moment.
Yeah.
That's when that person's life, that person trying to move from victim to survivor, that's when that person's life is most at risk. And I think while there isn't a cut or a slash or a spurt of blood, survivors are always wondering if there will be, and we needed to communicate that.
Yeah.
We needed to be like, there is danger for this woman until she physically gets out of there.
Yep.
But up until then, while she's still in that home, while she's still in his presence, it's still there. That danger is still there.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to go to a little more technical things. There's a light on a table in the therapist's office. Where's that light? It's kind of cool.
That is a visual representation of the AI.
Okay.
And so, again, we were talking about what does this look like? What does it look like? It's just we think about what we thought computers would look like. They used to fill an entire warehouse. Now I'm talking to you on one that is barely the size of the height of a comic book. And so we were talking about, well, now there's not going to be huge server rooms. Now there's not going to be tower computers. We have clouds now. Honestly, I don't think we initially had a visual representation of the AI. But something that is going to stay true for us for a while until the dreaded it now lives in our brains is embedded there is we as humans thrive on contact. We thrive on speaking with each other, seeing each other, and the therapist is speaking with and communicating with the AI, directing it to give her this memory or that, back it up to just this point, make her go through this moment again, see if she's going to make a different decision this time. And that's the thing that I think that's the hump that we're going to have to get over as humans communicating with AI, with tech, with like an ultimate being that isn't born the way we are. But we as humans need something to communicate with. And so that's what the therapist. So that's the visual representation of that. And I almost lobbied Elle, can we keep it? Because can we keep it somewhere? But it was too spooky, so we did not.
Elle, was the educated book real or not real?
The educated book is real. And I, it was a specific choice. Yeah. Have you read Educated?
I have not ever heard of it, so you're going to have to discuss a bit of it now.
Sure. Tara Westover is an incredible author. This was her debut novel. She grew up in a very fundamental Mormon household. And her religious experiences and sort of the oppressive nature of the male-dominated world in religion and her experience with abuse within the family. I would say it's likely one of the first times I read a book and went, oh, I feel seen. So there is like a completely other side of my background and story and life experience that leans that way. And so, yeah, it was a very specific choice because in the end of the book, you know, she does, not to spoil the ending, I don't think there's any surprise here, but she obviously does leave the family, leave the church, leave those traditional beliefs that she was raised in. And so, yeah, it was a very specific choice.
Okay, there's a scene then. You might be eating Thai food or Chinese food. Is it hot or cold?
Oh, it was hot on set.
Our key PAs
kept it warm.
Yeah, our key PAs, like, between takes would check. I don't think that had to be zapped in the microwave more than twice.
Yeah.
Which is good. Like, and also, Johnny and Elle are going to get those takes.
Yeah.
They're going to get those takes. That was awesome.
We were on a timeline, for sure. And everyone was aware.
As you were writing this, Elle, is there anything you wanted to put in the film? I mean, you have 11 minutes, which is not a long time. Is there anything you wanted to put in you couldn't do?
You know what, Simon, to be honest, we have seen it. So we premiered in Brooklyn recently with the film, and obviously we're based in New York. And so we were able to go to that screening. And in full transparency, watching it back, there is just... I watched the film and I genuinely feel like we made something with such deep integrity. And something that was important. And I just watch it and I say, there's just nothing that I would change. Awesome. We paid people for their time. We worked very hard on it. We created a wonderful product and there's just nothing that I would change or necessarily like put in at this point. I think the story is what it is. And, I'm very proud of it. And it's my first film. It's the first thing I've ever created outside of myself that wasn't just as an actor. And, so I'm very proud of it. I think in the future, of course, I am developing a feature length out of this. And so there are other things that will be coming. And I'm sure there are things that I could or would change, but at this point the film is made. And so I don't think looking back on what I could or couldn't change provides any value other than looking critically and saying, okay, what would be really great to put in a future script?
Okay. I'm off to fun questions. I don't think I left anything out. If I did, please tell me, but I think I did pretty good.
You did great. Okay. Are you kidding me?
Your first time on the show, I have to ask you the same question every time. Your favorite film?
My what?
Your favorite what, film? Favorite? I know yours is Minority Report, so I don't need to ask
it's
that
not.
One.
It's not.
No.
No. No. See, like, okay, here's the thing. And this is such a hard one, which is why, like Elle and I are already nervous about running into anybody from Letterboxd. Because to put it down to four is also crazy. If you were to ask me which movie influenced me first, like which was the first one that was living sure. rent-free in my head, the first one was Godfather 2. Okay. Watched it too young with my father, way too young. It was my father's favorite. Like when I say too young, like I was like sitting on his lap and falling asleep and he thought I was asleep. So he watched the rest of it.
Uh-oh.
But now that movie lives in my cells. Recent favorite movies, though, have been Barbarian, that horror film. Man, we're friends with a cinematographer for that. Zach is incredible. And like, talk about images that make you freak out. I do not deny that some of that is filtering into my own work. But of the recent films that are living in me rent free, it would be Talk to Me, Barbarian, and Poor Things. I gave a Letterboxd 4 by accident. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Do whatever you want.
If I had to take one, Simon, if I had to take one, it's going to have to be like a super special edition, probably cost $500, all the extras and you know, how it was made, Godfather 2, multiple Blu-ray disc release.
Oh. I love that. Gosh, it's completely unrelated in every capacity. It's nothing science fiction. I will always be a Marx Brothers fan. A Day at the Races is probably my favorite movie
wow.
of all time.
Old school.
Yeah. I grew up on classic film. So it was, yeah. Big fan. But I'm a huge fan of TV. If it's science fiction, I think that The Expanse is probably up there for me as a favorite.
Okay. One film you always recommend to people.
Who are these people, Simon?
Me. I'm here right
you?
Now recommending
oh, you.
Something.
Okay. You. Oh, man. Man, like... And... Simon, I haven't gotten to interview you, so, like, I don't... Okay. Anything by Yorgos Lanthimos, first of all.
Almost everything.
Anything by him. Anything by Jonathan Glazer. Anything by Sid Shama. Portrait of a Lady on Fire is gorgeous.
Amazing film that people do not watch.
Incredible. Like I watched that film on the plane and then I watched it in the theater and I was just like, I will continue going anywhere to see that.
So will I. Great film.
Oh my God. But yeah, like those three directors right now are in front of my brain.
Seen them all. Seen almost everything.
Oh man. Yeah. Like I the special edition, like the souvenir keychain. Yes, of any of those directors' films, absolutely. And also, especially Rubens' Triangle of Sadness. Yeah. Oh my God. Just
see that too.
A masterpiece. Watch that 6 times in the theater.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Elle?
Gosh, I think Sasha has hit films for sure.
I think...
If I was going to recommend something to you, again, I'm a huge TV watcher, so
Should I let her know I've never seen The Expanse? That might make her life easier.
Oh, my God. You should.
You're going to love it. Oh, my God.
I'm not a TV guy. It takes me years to watch it, but I will put it on my vast list of things I'm working on.
Oh, man. The Expanse is so
good. Built sci-fi. Yeah.
Yeah, and okay. It's like sci-fi, which is great. But I do recommend what is the spinoff from Big Mouth? There's a really great spinoff of Big Mouth.
I know what Big Mouth is. I've never seen it, but I know what it is.
Okay, I highly recommend it. They have a spinoff, and it's kind of like, you know, the kids movie about all the emotions and things like that.
Yes, emoji movie.
I don't know, one of those. Anyway, okay. It's like that, but for adults. So, like, you have a hormone monster.
Oh, Inside Out. You're thinking of Inside Out.
Yeah, Inside Out. Inside Out.
The Fall was amazing. That writer, I mean, she's, wow. Like,
oh, my God, so good.
Going to my last question. One film you've never seen, and only one, Sasha.
One film I've never seen?
And should have.
And should have. Oh, snap.
Oh, I know mine, Sasha, if that's helpful.
Yeah, no, you go first.
You write me about it every week. Sasha bugs me every week to watch Get Out, and I just haven't seen it yet. So I probably need to see it. Also,
wow.
The TV show is called Human Resources. I have seen his other films. I just haven't seen Get Out.
You need to see Get Out.
It's a little like, yeah. Well, I do need to see it. But TV show was Human Resources, by the way. That's what I recommend. Go ahead, Sasha. Passing the ball.
I'm embarrassed to admit this because people think that I should absolutely watch this. Citizen Kane.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything else. You need to go watch Citizen Kane. That's all I have to say.
And a lot of people I love and who love me and who've been so supportive of me over the years and my work and journey as a director, they're just like, you please watch this film so I don't hit you. That you
okay.
Haven't watched. Yeah.
We're almost running out of time. Let me just wrap this up quickly. Your film, I presume, is only available on the film circuit right now?
For now.
Yeah, correct.
For now.
Okay.
But it'll come out soon.
You got about 2 minutes. Tell everybody where they can find your stuff then.
Well, if you're a Toronto listener, sorry to jump in there, Sasha.
No, do it.
If you're a Toronto listener, there is a really something that we can't announce yet, but we will be in the Toronto area in December. So that is one way that you can come watch it, which we'll be posting on socials and et cetera. And Sasha, you can speak to how you.
Honestly, we're super excited. We can't wait to say it out loud about the Toronto screening. But I can tease a little bit that this film festival has been supportive of us in the past. I'm so excited to be able to work with them in any capacity always. But again, this time, we're going to be in Philadelphia. So please come there. And then we expect to do an online release, late winter, early spring.
Yeah. And we're on Instagram at In Your Own Time.
Perfect. Thank you for your time and have a great day.
Thank you, Simon.